Indeed, he is a good, good father, and what a joy it is to be able to say that we are loved by such a good father. Good morning, Paznaz. It is so good to be here worshiping with you. As many of you know, we concluded our series last week, Wired for Mission, which is hard to believe. We had a wonderful 13-week journey where we were walking through the book of Acts and looking together at the first missional church in the book of Acts and discovering together what it means for us as the people of God that we have been called and we have been created and we have been wired for mission. And it was such a joy and honor last week to be standing with you together to be able to say, yes, we are in for whatever God has for us. And we as a congregation are continuing to pray in a spirit and posture of openness. Lord, show us your vision. Show us where you are leading us. And as Pastor Scott said, one of the ways that you can plug into there in positioning ourselves in prayers as a congregation is in simply prayer, which we will begin on Wednesday nights for our Wednesday night prayer gathering in Lee Chapel at 6 o'clock. And also we gather every Thursday morning at 9:30. And we do hope you'll join us. And there are many other times that you can plug in, which should be on that Simply Prayer handout. And so as last week we concluded our series Wired for Mission, we will begin a brand new series next week called Finding God, which sounds maybe like to some of you an interesting title, but you know, it's easy to see God in the mountaintop experiences, isn't it? Sometimes in life, it's easy to say, wow, that was so God, that was such an answer to prayer, when we have those victorious moments or those moments of healing or those moments of freedom or those moments where we can just almost see God's tangible fingerprints on a situation. But what about those times where it's harder to see God, where things aren't so perfectly wrapped up, where things in life is not as easy? What about seeing God in the messiness of life, or in the suffering, or in disaster, or in the margins, or in the heartache? It's many times in those lives that we find ourselves in the valleys or in the margins or in the moments of suffering that we say, where are you, God? And we see throughout Scripture that in many times of lament, we see individuals call out or communities call out in lament saying, where are you, God? Or how long, O Lord? And we ask those questions, is God in those spaces? And so during the month of September and into the beginning of October, we are going to walk through that series together as a congregation, finding God in the most unexpected places of life and our world. And we'll begin that next week on Sunday, September 11th, where we will talk about finding God in disaster. And this morning is an in-between Sunday as we ended last week Wired for Mission and we kick off Finding God next week. And this week we are excited to welcome Pastor McKenzie to the pulpit. Many of you know, and that makes my heart so happy to see all the students over there so excited to see their youth pastor come up here and preach a sermon. As I talked about a couple weeks ago when we had Dr. Brad Strong here giving a wonderful message, I shared that one of my hearts and hopes for us as a congregation is that we would have a teaching and preaching team. Throughout my years of ministry in various churches that I have served in, I have always been a part of a teaching team. And I think it's wonderful for so many reasons. Number one, we get to hear different perspectives speaking into a sermon series that we have, and we are all better for it. We are all edified for it. And number two, I would not be the preacher that I am had I not had those experiences of preaching. We have many called individuals here in our congregation, and while I'll be in the pulpit the majority of the time and I'll be back next week, I think it's so important that we bring along our other pastors to speak into the life of a congregation and watch them use their gifts. And I think it's so wonderful also for our high school students and junior high students to see their youth pastor here behind the pulpit. And so I am so excited to hear Pastor McKenzie preach for a second time. He, as many of you know, he is our youth pastor. He is a graduate of the Master's of Divinity from Azusa Pacific University, and I'm excited to hear his sermon for a second time this morning. So would you please welcome Pastor McKenzie with me?
Thank you, everybody, and thank you, Pastor Terabeth, for a very kind introduction. How are you guys doing? Good? Great. Okay, do you mind if I open with a story about my sister? She would hate that I was telling this story. She doesn't know yet. She will. But my sister is a really good negotiator. She is someone who's able to kind of get what she wants out of a deal or an agreement. She can really work whoever she's interacting with to get the best part of the deal. And there's a story that illustrates that really well. When she was about 5 years old, and she's my older sister, she's 2 years older than me, so that puts me at about 3 years old, she learned something incredible. I don't know if it was at school, I don't know if it was at church, I don't know if it was at home, but she learned about contracts. She learned that in a contract, two different parties agree to something, and then they sign their names on a piece of paper to say that they'll follow through with that agreement. And she thought, this is great. I am going to invest my time and energy right now in something that may not yield benefits and results next year, 5 years, or 10 years from now, but come 20 years or 30 years or 40 years, I will be reaping in the benefits of my decision. So she approached me and she proposed an idea. She suggested that I don't know how she suggested it, but she suggested that I, for the rest of my life, for all of the money that I was ever going to make, I give it to her. And she wrote out the contract in crayon and left a line at the bottom of the page. And I, wanting my sister to be happy, I signed on the dotted line because, first of all, I had no idea what I was committing to. But I wanted my sister to kind of, I wanted the response that came from her when she was excited that I saw she was getting what she wanted. Fortunately, my sister has never attempted to hold me to that. Fortunately, I don't think it would hold up in the court of law. And fortunately, I am positive that it would not hold up in the court of mom. So it never made it very far. But she thought that she would get me to commit to something, and she did. And I thought, you know, I don't really know what I'm committing to, but it sounds great. Let's do it. In our story today, there's going to be a similar kind of commitment, except instead of me, it's a large group of people. And instead of a contract, it's a covenant. And instead of a five-year-old girl, it's the God who had just rescued this nation from the most powerful empire on the earth. But this story, which takes place in Exodus, it starts in Genesis. It actually starts at the very beginning. See, at the beginning of the story of Genesis, which is the first book of the Bible, the very opening of this book, God, or Yahweh, which is what the Israelites call God, created the world. And when Yahweh created the world, things were good. And then things weren't so good, and things started happening, and the world kind of started spiraling. And as the world was spiraling down to a less good place, Yahweh decided to act. And Yahweh decided to act by picking out one couple. Their names were Abram and Sarai, and wanted to talk to them and make a covenant with these two people. The end goal of the covenant was to bless all of the nations of the earth. All of the families of the earth will be blessed because of you, it says in Genesis 12:3. So then Abraham remarkably had a child, and then this child eventually had a child, and that continued, and eventually there's a lot of people, and they're not where Abraham grew up. They move into Egypt. But things in Egypt weren't so great. There was a really mean ruler who was kind of trying to get the most out of the Israelites, and Yahweh, the God who had made a covenant with the Israelites, made a covenant with Abraham, pulled the Israelites out of this land in remarkable fashion, did incredible and powerful things, and brought the Israelites to Sinai, to the mountain, to the negotiating table where they would be making a covenant. So, Yahweh, being the initiator of this conversation, lays out the terms of the agreement. In chapter 19, Yahweh says, I will make you a holy nation. I will make you a holy priesthood. I've created all the earth, and the whole earth is mine, but you will be a holy priesthood. And the Israelites in unison say, everything that the Lord has said, we will do. And I think that's kind of like, does anyone in here have an iPhone? Or does anyone in here have any sort of Apple device that has an update from time to time? When I receive an update for my iPhone, there's this thing that pops up. It's called the Apple Terms and Conditions. It tells me what I'm agreeing to when I download this new update. Once in my life have I ever even made it to the second paragraph of the terms and the conditions. I have committed to the terms and conditions because I don't care what I'm committing to, I want the update. It doesn't matter what I'm signing up for, I want the benefits and I want the results of that agreement now. And for the Israelites, when you're negotiating with the God who just moved in miraculous and powerful ways, they didn't have much negotiating power. So they agreed. They said, everything the Lord has said, we will do. So Yahweh, the God, starts telling them, okay, let me tell you a little bit more about some of those rules. And Yahweh lays out what we call the Ten Commandments. Yahweh speaks from the mountaintop and the clouds and the thunder and the lightning and the smoke. And it's crazy and it's terrifying. And the Israelites standing at near the bottom of the mountain, they say, whoa, 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 whoa. Hold on a second. I don't have a problem with any of these things you said we should do, but God, you're kind of scary. There's thunder and there's lightning. There's smoke. There's fire. And I, as an Israelite, am terrified. So, one of the greatest tragedies in the entire story of God's relationship with humanity happens. The Israelites say, God, you're too close. You're too close and we can't handle it. Please, please, please put someone between us because you are too close. Which Yahweh is a loving God. And Yahweh says, okay, if that's what you need, I'll invite Moses on up. We'll talk a little bit on the mountain, and Moses will come down, and Moses will tell you what I have told him. Moses will tell you the stipulations of the covenant. So Moses goes up, and Moses talks to Yahweh. And when Moses comes down, Moses tells the Israelites what it is they have committed to. The Israelites now have a chance to kind of back out, I guess, if you will. Got a chance to, whoa, hold on. I'm not ready for that. We'll go back to Egypt. But the Israelites say, everything the Lord has said, we will do. But it's a covenant. It's a covenant, which means it's not just like a verbal agreement. It's not a contract. It's very different than a contract, which unfortunately is what we in our culture know about agreements. So it was something that needed to be signified. It was something that needed some sort of a ritual declaration that both of these groups were agreeing. So they go through a ceremony. And at the end of the ceremony, guess what they say? Everything that the Lord has said, we will do. So now, not once, not twice, but three times the Israelites have tied themselves to a covenant with Yahweh. Everything that the Lord has said, we will do. Then you fast forward seven chapters where Moses steps away, hears more instructions from Yahweh. He's going to build a really nice place for Yahweh to dwell, to move with the Israelites, to be close enough but also far enough for the Israelites' comfort. And while Moses is up on the mountain with Yahweh, Moses and Yahweh start talking about something. Moses and Yahweh start talking about the fact that the Israelites, the people who just three times committed to hold up their end of the covenant, are breaking one of the earliest commandments that they agreed to. They have made an idol. They've made an idol, and I think they were trying to make it in the image of Yahweh. I think they were trying to worship Yahweh the way that they knew best, but they were not really doing it in a great way. They were kind of missing the mark. They were kind of falling short of the standards, short of the instructions and the stipulations of the covenant. So, when that happened, Yahweh and Moses started talking. And it's this really cool and really interesting dialogue. And I would encourage you to read it, and I encourage you to read it and then talk to someone about it, because it's super interesting. It's Exodus 32 and then Exodus 33, where Moses and Yahweh have this interaction, where Yahweh over here says something along the lines of, I can't believe they broke the covenant. I'm going to destroy them. And then over here, Moses says, hold on, Yahweh. You can't destroy them because remember, you're Yahweh. And then Yahweh says, you're right. Well, okay, I'm not going to destroy them, but I'm definitely not going to go with them. Then Moses says, Yahweh, you have to go with them. You're Yahweh, remember? Then Yahweh says, you're right. Okay, fine, we're good. I'm not pleased about it, but I will go with the Israelites. We have not completely broken the covenant. Although the Israelites acted in terrible and horrible ways, although they didn't hold up their end of the bargain, I will still go with them. So Moses then comes to talk to the Israelites. But when Moses comes to talk to the Israelites, he carries in two hands two tablets. And I've often seen depictions of these two tablets where one tablet has the first five and one tablet has the second five commandments, the 6 through 10, we'll say it that way. But what I think probably is more likely is Moses is carrying down two copies of the same covenant on these two tablets. Because the covenant was agreed to by Yahweh, and the covenant was agreed to by Israel. There are two parties in the covenant. Each party gets a copy of the covenant because this is official. So Moses carries down these tablets. He carries down the signs of the covenant. And when he gets down to the people, when Moses gets down to the place where the Israelites are acting in terrible and horrible ways, Moses is grieved and throws the tablets to the ground. And when Moses throws the tablets to the ground, they're destroyed. Moses knows that the covenant between Yahweh and Israel has been broken. But fortunately, the covenant that Moses was so quick to dismiss is not so easily abandoned by Yahweh. And Yahweh continues to be involved in the life of Israel, not only for the good of Israel, but also for the entire world. And that brings us to our text for this morning. It brings us to Exodus 34, where Moses asks to see Yahweh. Moses asks to encounter Yahweh and Yahweh's glory. And Yahweh says, we'll give you a little bit. Can't give you too much. Can't overdo it, but we'll give you a little bit. I will walk in front of you, and you will encounter me in my glory. That's where we go to Exodus 34. And just so you know, you, if you are not reading from the Common English Bible, may have some different words in there. Don't worry, we are going to talk about that. But Exodus 34, verse 1. The Lord said to Moses, cut two stone tablets like the first ones. I'll write on these tablets the words that were on the first tablets, which you broke into pieces. Get ready in the morning and come up to Mount Sinai. Stand there on top of the mountain in front of me. No one else can come up with you. Don't allow anyone even to be seen anywhere on the mountain. Don't even let sheep and cattle graze in front of the mountain. So Moses cut two stone tablets like the first ones. He got up early in the morning and climbed Mount Sinai, just as the Lord had commanded him. He carried the stone tablets in his hands. The Lord came down in the cloud and stood there with him and proclaimed the name the Lord, or Yahweh. Yahweh is the Hebrew version of that, but we generally replace it with the Lord. The Lord passed in front of him and proclaimed, the Lord, a God who is compassionate and merciful, very patient, full of great loyalty and faithfulness, showing great loyalty to a thousand generations, forgiving every kind of sin and rebellion, yet by no means clearing the guilty, punishing for their parents' sins, their children and their grandchildren, as well as the third and fourth generation. At once Moses bowed to the ground and worshipped. He said, if you approve of me, my Lord, please go along with us. Although these are a stubborn people, forgive our guilt and our sin, and take us as your own possession. So there's two things that we have to talk about. There's two things that we can't not talk about in that passage. The first one is probably the least fun to talk about. It's the part where it says, yet by no means clearing the guilty, punishing for their parents' sins, to the third and the fourth generation. That's really hard. I read that and I think, why is that in there? I don't like that. But the more that I think about it, and the more that I learn about that, I think that Yahweh is the type of God who invites people to make choices. And unfortunately, sometimes those choices are bad choices. And sometimes those choices are negative cycles of behavior. And sometimes the decisions that we make affect the next generation and the generation after that. And that's really, really hard. But that's not the key of this passage. That's not the part that carries the weight. Because the third and the fourth generation, that seems like a long time. But on the other hand, you have the God who shows great loyalty and faithfulness to the thousandth generation. A thousand generations. That is the highlight. That is the God that we're talking about. And you may have read a different word there for great loyalty. I read great loyalty, but you may have read loyal love. You may have read love, unfailing love, steadfast love, loving kindness as one word. Mercy, faithful love, gracious love, loving kindness as two words. There are so many different translations of that word. The Hebrew word is chesed. You gotta roll the ch at the beginning. The chesed, which most of the time when I say it, I don't bother to make the ch sound because I'm not very good at it. And it feels really awkward and kind of wooden when I make that sound. But the chesed, or the chesed of God, is the great loyalty. And if I could translate that word differently, I don't know that I really have a right to, but if I could translate that word differently, I would translate it as something like over-the-topness, or like above and beyondness, or even abundance, because it's something that shows that Yahweh is faithful to the covenants that Yahweh has made. But it also shows that Yahweh gives abundantly and freely within those covenants, more and more and more, beyond the point of fairness, beyond the point of equality. Yahweh just keeps on giving. And Yahweh's over-the-topness, Yahweh's above and beyondness of what could be or even should be considered fair, the abundance and the generosity that Yahweh shows here in this story is the setting in which Yahweh reestablishes a covenant with the people who kept pushing Yahweh away. Yahweh shows great chesed to Israel over and over and over. I'll stop in Exodus 34, but when we get to Leviticus, guess what? Yahweh shown chesed. Numbers, Deuteronomy, Joshua, you just keep going, and you just keep finding a God full of abundance who gives to the people that are in covenant with him. But Yahweh doesn't only give chesed to Israel. Yahweh's chesed continues. And here at Paznaz, we are the recipients of that today. I mean, I think the image that jumps to mind initially is the way that God moved through the person of Jesus Christ and through the death on the cross and the resurrection to bring new life and new hope and new future for not only Paznaz, but for people all over the world. But even beyond that, if we can go beyond that, as we look around, we have an incredible building to meet in. We have faithful people who come together and who know one another. There are people in this community who can tell stories about generations and generations of God's faithfulness here and on other locations, but within this community. The Lord, full of chesed. But Yahweh doesn't only show chesed to Israel and the church in Paznaz. But we, as human beings, are actually able to show chesed as well. Now, we can't show it to Yahweh necessarily, because how do we give above and beyond in response to God? So there are a couple references to it where people show chesed to Yahweh in the Bible, but it's pretty rare. But you can find stories where people show chesed to one another, where people act like Yahweh in the way that people display this chesed. And I know that covenants maybe aren't as common today as they once were. We don't have covenants all over the place. But at the same time, there are still covenants today. There's covenants of marriage, the covenant of baptism, which there's a baptism opportunity coming up soon. So if any of you guys are interested in being baptized, this is a great opportunity. But one of the really cool things about the covenant of baptism is that it's not just a covenant that is made by the person who is being baptized. We actually have orders of worship where the congregation then responds, because it's not just someone being baptized to be baptized, but it's someone joining a community and someone making a covenant to that community. And at the same time, the community covenanting to that person who is making that commitment in baptism. The covenant goes both ways. Even when we practice baby dedication, even when we accept new members, there's an opportunity for everybody in the room to commit to something, to covenant to something, to have the opportunity to invest deeply in the life of not only the person who's committing to something, but the church as a whole. We have the chance to covenant and to commit together. And the good news is that the proper response to the chesed of Yahweh is to show chesed to one another. If the church is supposed to be anything like the Yahweh that we've encountered, the Yahweh that's talked about in this book, then the church has to live not only in faithfulness to covenants we've made, but also in above and beyondness, in over the topness to one another with the covenants that we've made. Now, maybe the best example that I think we have of this, it appears in the book of Acts. And if you've been here for the last 13 or 14 weeks, you've probably heard something from the book of Acts. So don't allow me to belabor the point too much. But in Acts 2, you get a picture of the new church, the community of people that are living together, the community of people that are sharing, the community of people that are praying together. It's a picture of what it looks like to show chesed to one another. But as the community lives together, the community practices multiple things together. One of the things they do is they share meals together. I can't think of a better way to live in covenantal relationship with one another than to share that most fundamental human act of eating together, of taking food and passing it to one another, of creating food and then inviting someone into that experience. So as we, as PASNAZ, dwells within the chesed of Yahweh together, may we show great chesed to one another. And may we show great chesed to one another through the sharing of many, many meals together. Will you guys pray with me? Yahweh, God, you are good and you are faithful. You are beyond faithful. And God, we praise you. We just sit in some of that gratitude right now of how when things are hard, and how when we screw up and when we fall short, God, you don't abandon us. You stay true to the covenant even when we can't maintain the covenant ourselves. God, help us. Help us as we live together as a community in the world. Help us to show chesed to one another. But God, help us to show it to those members of this greater community who may have never come onto PASNAZ's campus before. May we show chesed to your people, both inside and outside the church. We love you, God, and thank you for the opportunity to come together and to worship you today. It's in your holy and your precious name we pray. Amen.